12:11 on WGN. The Wintrust Business Lunch is up and running. This is Sean Williams. Thanks for joining us. Pete Zimmerman is the producer. We'll be here until 1 o'clock. Then Anna DeVlantis comes your way. We mentioned, and probably Anna and Ro surely will touch on this a little later on, the Bears sent a note out on the sports business front to season ticket holders saying, "We are disappointed to share that this will result in season ticket packages not being available for the 2020 season. You do not get to use your season ticket package for the 2020 season. In the event the Bears will be allowed to seat some fans, priority will be given to the PSO holders, those of you with the personal seat licenses." And the Cubs are facing a similar dilemma. They've asked the city and Major League Baseball to review their proposal for 6,000 to 7,000 people to sit at Wrigley Field, not just for the purpose of getting people in the ballpark this year and revenue, but for the possibility that they won't be able to seat capacity crowds next year. So they want to see how they can do it this year. That's a sobering thought, isn't it? But then again, April's right around the corner. Can you imagine they're already worrying about seating people next season? I don't blame them for wanting to make some money and put some folks in the stands. 6,000 to 7,000, the city and Major League Baseball have not yet approved those proposals. Let's talk a little bit about stocks and how they are doing right now. Greg McBride joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Welcome back, Greg. How are you?
Good afternoon, John. Happy Friday.
Greg is a senior vice president and the chief analyst at Bankrate.com. You folks just got the results on a survey about equities. What did you find out?
Yeah, this is something we've been looking at for about 8 years or so. We poll consumers on what do you think is the best way to invest money over the long term, money you wouldn't need for more than 10 years. And for the second time in the last 3 years, the stock market has come out on top. What's surprising, John, is that in the years preceding that, you know, the early years of the bull market, the stock market was a distant third. It took a long time for people to warm up to the market. Now the past couple of years, two of the last three, it's beaten out real estate for that top spot.
Real estate and equities and then what, bonds or cash? Where else do they put their money?
Cash, believe it or not, is third, and that's no fluke. We've seen cash, in the top three every single year. It's not, great for short-term needs, but, for the long-term, it just isn't going to cut it, particularly at today's low interest rates. It won't preserve that buying power. So I think that shows that there's an ever-present level of risk aversion that a lot of individuals have.
So stocks are number one right now. Then two, can you do 1, 2, 3 again for me?
Yeah, stocks were top of the list at 28%. Real estate was second at 26%. And cash was third at 18%. We did see an uptick in gold and precious metals. That was fourth at 14% of investors citing that as the best way to invest money they wouldn't need for more than a decade.
Yeah, well, certainly precious metals are doing very, very, very well right now. Real estate is doing pretty well, too, though. I mean, interest rates are low, and in a kind of tight market like we have in Chicago, people are getting good prices. So there's value in real estate. But I guess with the plunge of the market, they must have thought, boy, there's some real opportunity there, too, huh?
Well, real estate's been very consistent. Roughly about 1 in 4 individuals picks real estate every year. We don't see a whole lot of fluctuation there like we do with sentiment regarding the stock market, for example. And so what we've noticed, the stock market, gold and precious metals in particular, that the higher, the better the sentiment, it tends to come on the heels of strong returns. Yeah. This is only the second time the stock market has actually been the most common selection. And in both cases, now as well as in 2018, it came on the heels of a very strong rally.
I wonder if that's people putting money in the big $4 trillion companies, Google and stuff like that, or are they buying index funds? Are they just, is this mutual funds driving it, or I wonder if it's individual players?
It's probably some of each. I mean, there is definitely the broader movement towards indexing. Of course, the big tech stocks comprise a larger and larger share of the indexes. But I think the bigger concern I have is just performance chasing. That it's one thing to, you know, say you've got the stomach for volatility when markets are going up. But the real test for that is how do you behave when it's going down? And so, for example, in 2018 was the other year we've seen stocks as the most common selection. Well, after we saw that 20% meltdown in the fourth quarter of 2018, when we did the poll in 2019, stocks didn't fare so well. So, you know, we see a big rebound this year following the almost 50% rebound from the lows in March.
Any other surprises or notable results from your survey?
Yeah, millennials, which, you know, for a long time, we've been looking at this for about a decade, have been very conservative with long-term investments and have in particular shied away from the stock market. We did see a notable shift from real estate and into both stocks as well as precious metals on the part of millennials relative to where they had been just a year or two ago.
Wonder what that's all about.
I think some of that too is you know performance chasing, but I'm also encouraged by the fact that you know, we've seen two sharp market declines in the last 2 years, right? End of 2018 and then, of course, this year. And in both cases, we saw a very swift rebound. And so the long-term merits of the market, you know, might be resonating with investors that previously were skeptical, that you know, having seen the market bounce back quickly in both of those occasions of late, you know, might have been a selling point for those investors who, you know, had previously been a little too squeamish to get in.
Greg McBride, Senior Vice President and the Chief Analyst at Bankrate. Visit Bankrate.com. Thanks for your time, Greg.
Thank you, John.
Philip Weiss joins us again, the President of Seyfarth at Work. Visit Seyfarth.com. That's Seyfarth.com. Welcome back, Philip. How are you?
Great, John. Thanks for having me again.
Last time we talked about managing offices, but I know on your radar right now is the fact that there's some COVID scams out there. What are you hearing about?
Yeah, it's actually quite surprising and a little alarming. As we all have seen on the internet over the years, scams abound in any time period. But in the age of COVID, they're a particular problem. The not-for-profits that track these things, the Better Business Bureau, they've seen an enormous spike in online, in-person, and phone scams. And what's really interesting, John, is typically a scam or a con would take advantage of a vulnerable population. In a way, we're all a vulnerable population right now. We're all living in some level of fear given COVID, and therefore we're all at risk.
That's a good point. I mean, when you hear about those Nigerian princes that take advantage of little old ladies, you say, well, maybe those little old ladies just don't know better, but you'd think that businesses, smart business people would know better. But what do we know about COVID, right?
Yeah, that's so well put. I mean, we are all the little old ladies of this particular time period, in a sense, because we don't know enough, and we live with a certain level of fear, or at least on edge. And this is true for business people, consumers, individuals at home, really every segment of society. And one area that we're hearing a lot about from our clients, our business clients, is a challenge with bogus business inspectors. These are people that come to the door of a business, often a store, claim to be from a state or federal government, and announce that they've received an anonymous complaint about the business or its operations. And typically the way this scheme runs is they either demand money up front to prevent the company from being closed down for a multi-day inspection, or they'll do something even far less complicated. They'll lean forward, and we've heard this from several of our clients, and outstretch their hand and see if the business owner, John, will shake the hand of this phony inspector. And if he or she does so, they deem that a violation. They find the individual on the spot and demand payment. So if someone's at your door, they don't have a proper ID, they don't have a legitimate complaint they can show you, don't let them in. Call the state, call the authorities, because that's probably a bogus inspector.
It's hard to imagine that that scheme works, that people would then pay them on the spot. I guess if you do it enough, every now and then you catch a fish. And by the way, if you're a little old lady, I didn't mean to offend you in any way. We are all vulnerable. Talk to me about masks or maybe solutions that people are selling. Is there something going on in that area as well?
Yes. So there's a couple of risks related to masks. One is the general PPE, protective equipment risk, and that is there's a lot of charlatans online that are offering protective wear, protective materials, cleansing materials that really are not up to snuff, up to and including false cures for COVID. And to your point, John, about people who are at risk of being fooled, there's a family in Florida that was indicted last week for selling thousands and thousands of vials of what they purported to be a foolproof cure to COVID. So there are many targets out there, as you say, of all ages. The other interesting risk related to masks, and this is a tricky one, John, is there's groups online that are offering at no cost what they call mask exemption cards. And this is more of almost a political fraud than a financial fraud. And unsuspecting individuals are printing these cards, and the cards simply state, due to my disability, due to my medical condition, you have to allow me into your business without a mask. The cards even are imprinted with a fraudulent Department of Justice seal. And this is a complicated one for businesses because you shouldn't be honoring an invalid card, but if someone comes forward with a possible disability and says they are not able to wear a mask for respiratory reasons, there are steps you can take. There are ways you can offer them goods and services, perhaps curbside, contactless delivery, etc. But be wary of simply saying yes because someone comes and shows you a card that looks like it's issued by the U.S. government.
Philip Weiss works with businesses on these kinds of issues, although this is a new wrinkle for SafeArth at Work. Visit SafeArth.com. One last thing, pets. Can you talk a little bit about the adoption area? I understand that that's an area where there's some scamming going on.
Absolutely. About 20 to 25% of all shopping scams in the last few weeks have been related to fake or false pet adoption agencies. And this, again, takes advantage of the fear, the quarantine loneliness, the uncertainty. So if you're online and you see a site that says free pets, or if you're dealing with an individual and you have questions about the fees that they are adding on suddenly, stop the conversation. Go to the Humane Society or the American Kennel Club. Look for legitimate rescue and breeders because that's the key. Whether it's free pets, fraudulent cures, or phony inspectors, we want to all be vigilant.
One last thing. Terry Savage mentioned on our show Wednesday that there's a scam going on about the stimulus checks or unemployment, the $600 bonus. Are you hearing about that too?
Yes, and that's a great point because as we all know, these scams, they either prey on people's fear, but they also connect to people's possible financial gain. So if you receive a call from the IRS telling you money is coming your way, subject to you sharing certain financial other information, it is virtually, with almost certainty, a scam because the IRS does not call. Checks come by mail or they're direct deposited into your account. So be very wary of not only governmental, people coming to be governmental representatives, but your favorite retailer might send you what looks like an email offering a $300 certificate for free food. Given the pandemic, go to the retailer's website. Go Google the source. Make sure that's a real offer that's provided to you by your actual retailer.
Good advice. I'm sorry we need it. Philip Weiss, President, SafeArth, SeyFarth, SafeArth.com. Nice to talk to you, Philip. We always appreciate your help.
Thanks so much. It's a pleasure.
David Picorni joins us, the president of the Greater Chicagoland Fellowship. Let's talk a little bit about real estate. Hi, David. You're on WGN. How are you today?
Very good, sir, and thank you for having me.
So tell me what you guys do. I know that it is essentially to try and provide affordable housing to people, correct?
That is correct, yes. We started this program back, 2001, 2002. Me personally, I was a HUD building inspector for, a little over 40 years now. And I I was watching all these other nonprofits doing what we do today, and I found it very intriguing on what they were doing. And we approached HUD back then. That was in 2001, 2002, and became a HUD-approved housing developer in HUD's affordable housing program. And since then, we've probably done close to about 500 properties so far, and we've helped a lot of people with home ownership counseling and so on and so forth. And it's been a great mission for us, and it's been a great journey.
So do you do this in challenged neighborhoods, or do you do it everywhere?
We're north of Route 80 and all the way up to the Wisconsin border. And it's more in the revitalization areas.
Are you building homes or are you rehabbing existing ones?
Well, we work directly with a place called National Community Stabilization. We're also in partnerships with Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, HUD, and several other larger banks to where we obtain REO properties from these partners of ours. And we turn around and rehab them and sell them to low to moderate income individuals and families.
So I guess those people are getting a recently rehabbed house. I think you called it refreshed. And they're getting it at probably a pretty good price these days, particularly, well, I don't know, do the current interest rates apply here?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's I mean, we see the housing market right now. I mean, it's booming right now. With the COVID thing right now, it's affected us a little bit, but not because of the housing market. It's just getting the inspections done, the permits in order correctly, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So it slowed our organization down a little bit, but it really hasn't affected our organization all that much.
Can you tell me what a typical family or customer is for you then, David?
Well, it goes by family size. It's for one person in a household, I believe it just changed, actually. I'm going to say it's approximately about $83,000 for one individual, and then it goes up per individual per household.
No, I'm confused. $83,000, what, the purchase price of the home or the amount of money?
Oh, no. The income. I'm talking about the income aspect on who qualifies for our program.
Oh, I see. But so you, as an individual, you could be earning up to $83,000 and still qualify for this program. And are these working families, single parents? What are we typically looking at?
They're all over the board. They're single family, single mothers, single fathers, you name it. It's families of 10, families of 2, anybody that qualifies under the low to moderate income. 120% is what we go for of the median income.
And I presume then these are people who feel like, what, the prices on real estate in their area are high. They need somebody to come in, sell them a rehabbed house, and make it feel new or good, but more affordable. Is that the niche you kind of carved out?
Absolutely. We focus on homes anywhere from condos, I would say approximately $75,000 up to about $250,000 on the sales prices.
Yeah. And the problem with that part of the market is sometimes those are very distressed buildings, but if somebody had come in and cleaned them up and fixed them up first, I suspect you've got a waiting list of people that want to get in.
Oh, let me tell you, there's bidding wars on our properties. It's like I said, the real estate market is booming right now, and there are bidding wars when we put our places on the market.
David Picorni is the president of the Greater Chicagoland Fellowship. If folks want to find out more, where do they go, David?
You can go to www.greaterchicagolandfellowship.org.
Greaterchicagolandfellowship.org. Good luck to you, David. Thanks for your time today.
Very good, sir, and thank you for having me.
Stay well. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute. With that, this is Steve Grzanich.
Wind the clock. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The Cubs and Comcast strike a last-minute deal that puts the marquee network, the Cubs' new TV network, on Comcast just in time for the start of the 2020 regular season. Marquee appeared on Comcast earlier this morning. Commercial property sales in the Chicago area have plummeted amid the coronavirus pandemic. Commercial real estate deals were down 41% during the 3 months ending June 30th. Chicago area retail property sales also took a nosedive, falling 71% year over year. And Tesla is suing Rivian Automotive over what it calls theft of trade secrets. The company that's making electric trucks in downstate Normal has been accused of stealing trade secrets and poaching employees. Rivian calls the lawsuit baseless. I'm Steve Brzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
David Jennings watching the markets. Go ahead, David.
The Dow is now off by 200 points, 26,454. The NASDAQ down 112. The S&P is off by 27.
Orion Samuelson's looking at the market scene. Okay, O.
Let's look at agriculture and the trading in that commodity today at the Board of Trade. September wheat futures are up 7 cents a bushel, putting them at 536.5. But September corn down 2 cents a bushel at 326. And the August soybean contract trading 2 cents lower, trading at $9.25. Mercantile exchange, the livestock futures today, we find the August lean hog contract is down 30 cents a hundredweight at $54.17. The August live cattle contract is up 22 cents at $101.07. And the August feeder cattle contract down just a dime at $141.90 a hundredweight. I want to share with you a couple of emails that crossed my desk in the last day. This one from Zippy Duvall, the president of the American Farm Bureau Federation, who said, "Many of you know that I was diagnosed with COVID-19 2 weeks ago, and I want to begin this message with a heartfelt thank you for everyone's thoughts and prayers. It's amazing how this virus hits people in such different ways. My COVID-19 experience has been much lighter than others have had. I'm blessed and grateful for that, but I also want to send prayers to everyone whose health has been more severely impacted, as well as those whose livelihoods have been threatened." He said, "For me, I felt very sick, high fever, headache, and exhausted. Happy to say that today I'm feeling much better, and I was able to conduct a lot of Farm Bureau business by conference call and by Zoom." So good news from Zippy Duvall, president of the American Farm Bureau Federation. And then those of us in the farm broadcasting industry are not without the challenge, because yesterday we joined the other conventions that are going to be held virtually. The board of the National Association of Farm Broadcasters reached this decision after ongoing monitoring and evaluation of current COVID-19 cases and updates throughout the United States. And so the NAFB, the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Board, and staff members currently working to transition this year's convention to its virtual representation. What a summer. What if we never got to go to a county fair or a state fair or a convention or a farm progress show again because it will all be done virtually? I hope not. So that's a look at our money and agribusiness for today. I'm Orion Samuelson.
12:49 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm John Williams. Pete Zimmerman is our producer. And our final guest this afternoon is Chris Gladwin. He is the co-founder of The Forge. It's that place you may have heard a little bit about in Lamont, at the Lamont Quarries. Visit forgeparks.com. Chris, welcome to WGN Radio. How are you today?
I'm doing fantastic, John. I'm sitting here by the edge of the quarry lake enjoying the view.
Yeah, talk a little bit about that. It's at the quarry in Lamont, 300 acres you all have purchased, and you put up zip lining, rope climbing, mountain biking, etc. Is there an actual quarry, though, carved out? Like, I know there was one not too far from LaGrange. It was filled with water. Is that what you've got there as well?
Yeah, so we have a public-private partnership where we've purchased some land, and other parts of the land we've partnered with both the village and the township of Lamont to put together 300 acres. And it's a really historic site. So when they made the Illinois-Michigan Canal through the property in the 1800s, which is why Chicago is where it is, they found limestone out here, and so they quarried it. And they, you know, on our property, there's five big quarry lakes. They've all filled in with limestone filtered spring water, so they're really clean. And you know, some of the stone here actually went to build places like Water Tower.
It's a fascinating bit of history there, but you guys have now turned it into a recreation area, right?
Yeah. So the land, you know, has been turned into, you know, I've heard some friends of mine call it the world's largest jungle gym. So we have an aerial adventure course out here. It's the largest ropes course in the world, the three tallest towers. It's also got zip lines. You know, there's miles of activities in there, all connected in one big course. There's climbing. And that's just the Eight Towers Adventure. There's bouldering, paddling, you know, different kinds of bicycling, lots of stuff out here.
How do people use it? Do they buy a membership? Is it pay as you go? How does it work?
Well, parts of the park are open to the public. So there were some trails here, and we're building more. And those are, you know, the park is free to visit. The activities are pay to play. And you can, you know, like you said, you can buy an annual membership. It's around $200, you know, a little more if you're an adult, a little less if you're a youth or a year. You can buy a day pass. We have twilight passes. You can, you know, purchase individual activities. So there's a range of prices available.
I saw you had mountain biking. Do I bring my own bike or do I use yours?
Either one. So we rent bikes. Then we also have built a, you know, state-of-the-art pump track, you know, and if you know what that means, you know, you'll know how fun those are. We've also got a skills track where you can kind of build up your skills, you know, and balance and things like that on a mountain bike. And there's about 5 miles of easy trails out here. And then we're building in the fall, and this is one of the things that was affected by COVID because we planned to have it at opening, a bunch of single track as well.
That's interesting because in my mind I've got sort of a fairly confined area and I can go just do all of the things like at a Disney World, but this sounds like it's much more spread out.
Yeah, it's actually, it's about the size of Disneyland, actually. It's about 300 acres. And, you know, the space is about a half mile wide by a mile and a half. So it's a rectangle. It's pretty big. It takes you, you know, good 30, 40 minutes to walk from one side to the other. But yeah, it's, and that's actually a real advantage for us with COVID. You know, because we have so much space, mm-hmm. we're able to space everybody out. I'm sitting here on, you know, the quarry shelf. What we call the lower shelf, which is right on the edge of the quarry. And there's about 60 people here, and everyone's 6 feet apart, except for, like, family groups that are together at a table. You know, and that's very easy for us to do because we just have so much space.
You have concessions there? I could buy lunch, or do I bring my own?
We have a grab-and-go restaurant called The Foundry, which is just fantastic. You know, people have been raving about it, some really cool stuff. And then this weekend on Sunday, we're going to begin opening a dining experience we call Forge Fire, which is fire-cooked meals. And we're going to start with what we call the cookout meal. And you can imagine what that's going to be, you know, burgers, brats, chicken, plus vegetarian options.
So the Forge is open, and is it open 7 days a week? Could I go there today, tomorrow, this weekend?
This weekend it's open. So we opened last weekend. We're open today, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and then we close for 4 days. And then on the 31st, we open every day all year.
Starting the 1st of August then. Well, that's great news. I'm really excited for you guys. What if my kid is very active and able and I'm less so? Should we both go? Do I drop them off? What have you got for the different skill levels?
Well, that's one of the things that was an innovation for the park. A lot of places like this, it'll be like a zip line course and everybody does the same course. And, you know, regardless of age or ability. Here, what we did is we've combined a bunch of activities, you know, that just appeal to different people. So you might want to, you know, go for a walk. You know, one of your kids might want to go paddling. Another might want to go climbing. You know, they might have a friend who wants to go on the pump track. Easy to do, because all that stuff is here. And then within each activity, we've designed different skill levels. So you can kind of go to your challenge. So on our Eight Towers Adventure, you know, the course is designed so the higher up you go, the harder it gets. So kind of the bottom level is very accessible for beginners, very easy. You get up to the top, and it's like expert level. And we've even built in, which is, I think, the largest handicap accessible ropes course that I'm aware of. So part of that course is also handicapped accessible. So if you have, like, someone in your family who's, you know, wheelchair-bound or, you know, has some kind of physical challenge, you know, they can participate as well. And for them, you know, we're all about, like, people finding their challenge and kind of growing. And, you know, if you're handicapped and you go on that course, you're going to get this incredible experience of, like, challenging yourself and growing. It's really exciting.
Is that the Eight Towers adventure you're talking about there?
Yep. Yeah, the whole part of it. I can actually see it now. There's, you know, one of the towers is 90 feet tall, and I can see at about 70 feet up is a zipline platform that goes 1,000 feet across, you know, the Forge Quarry Lake. And I can see the lines going up now. They're diagonal where we can actually hoist someone up who's wheelchair bound, and they can have this incredible experience of ziplining across this huge lake. It's really cool.
People that are physically challenged that way or otherwise completely able, how safe is it? Should anybody be worried here?
Yeah, so the way that there's a lot of zip lines and ropes courses and climbing in the United States and around the world. So there's a lot of data on safety. And the things that really make for a very safe course are, one, you have modern equipment, and we have the most modern safe equipment available. Two, you have a good training program. So we have a very thorough, very long training program for our hosts, our adventure hosts, our adventure guides is what we call them. And then we also have an inspection program. That's the third thing, where we have a third party come in and inspect our equipment periodically. With that combination of things, you know, it's very safe. And then on top of that, we've added all the COVID stuff. So to go on the Eight Towers Adventure, for example, you have to wear gloves. And part of that is we're trying to minimize the amount of touching of the common things. And we sell them if you don't have bring your own. You have to wear a head covering because you're going to have a helmet on that, you know, someone else is going to use later. So we don't want you to touch that with your, you know, we're trying to minimize contact. And you do have to wear a mask while you're on that course.
One last question from one of our listeners. Can I get a gift certificate online?
Yes, you can. Just go to forgeparks.com.
Forgeparks.com. I'm really excited about this. I wish you nothing but luck. What a good idea, and boy, do we need it now. Continued success over there.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank
you so much.
You betcha. Chris Gladwin is the tech entrepreneur and co-founder of The Forge in Lamont.